Chapter 49. The key to the looking-glass maze pulsed with radiance. Alice was surprised to see it in her palm, but an intended never left the maze with less than when she entered, although hopefully, as in Alice's case, she left with much more. Holding the glowing cube in one hand and the white art scepter in the other, Alice stood unflinching amid the fighting. A four-card tried attacking her, but she blew at him and he went crashing back through a wall of the puzzle shop. "Princess!" Homburg Molly shouted. "She has the sceptre!" Bibwit's joy would have had him speared on the end of a two-card's blade if Molly hadn't jumped in front of him with her hat shield. A couple of three-cards broke away from Hatter, but before even he could react, with a quick 1-2, Alice jabbed the pointed end of her sceptre into the medallion-sized area above their breastplates. The card soldiers folded up, forever inactivated, as a seeker careened into the shop and snatched the glowing cube out of Alice's hand. Molly was about to throw her hat at the creature when... "Let it go," Alice said. "We don't need it any more." She could hear the seekers disperse through the sky, heading back to Mount Isolation. "Now for the rest of the card, soldiers." Alice banged her scepter on the floor, and it splintered into many smaller, identical scepters. With a sweep of her hand, the miniature replicas launched themselves into the vulnerable spot of every single card soldier, each of which folded, no longer a menace. The Elysian stood in sudden peace, with the dead members of the Cut scattered about them. Dodge, General Doppelganger, the chessmen, all turned to their princess. The vaguely luminescent quality she'd had as a child was now unclouded by immaturity, uncertainty, or reluctance. She stood like a sun among them, radiant with newfound strength. And any lingering doubt in the Elysians' minds about her ability to lead them vanished at the sight of her.
"I'd say she's ready, wouldn't you?" the Rook said.
The Elysians cheered, all except for Dodge, whose opportunity for revenge had never been so close. Alice's luminescence faded to a steady glow as she studied her childhood friend. Her experience in the maze had made her more wary of his behaviour. She would have to keep an eye on him, as she would on anyone who stoked their potential for black imagination with the tinder of hatred.
"More of the Cut will be coming,"
General Doppelganger warned. "Let them come," Alice said. She left the puzzle shop and the Elysians followed. She walked out into the middle of Emerald Drive and gazed up at the rotted buildings and towers of the surrounding neighbourhood, as if able to feel the pain of these inanimate structures, the toll exacted by Red's rule on her beloved Wondertropolis. Then she turned her imagination to the holographic billboards around the city. Without so much as a wince of effort, she imagined her own face in place of their usual advertisements and reward offers. "I've finished running from you, Red. It's time for you to run." As Alice spoke the words in Emerald Drive, her holographic images voiced them on every street. Wonderlanders paused amid lawful and unlawful pursuits to stare at the beautiful woman speaking from signs on which, until now, they had only ever seen red. More than a few wanted the mistress of black imagination to remain in power, knowing how to profit in a world such as hers. But most, though not yet daring to cheer aloud, celebrated Alice's rise in their hearts. Chapter 50.
"I run?"
Red guffawed. She squinted out the observation dome as Alice's transmission ended.
"Alice Hart's misplaced confidence will be the death of her."
"Today, Wonderland will be rid of Alice Hart for good,"
Jack of Diamonds asserted with a puffing out of his already puffed-out belly. He was perhaps too eager to please, because Red flicked an annoyed glance at the wigbeast.
"I beg your pardon for speaking your imperial viciousness," he said.
"Beg all you want, you powdered and pampered idiot. If I don't get into the looking-glass maze soon, it will make no difference to your fate."
The cat grinned and smoothed his whiskers. The Lord and Lady of Diamonds, the Lord and Lady of Clubs, and the Lord and Lady of Spades, who together made up Red's Cabinet of Military Oversight, shuffled their feet, cleared their throats, and in general enacted every nervous tick available to people unsure of how to ingratiate themselves with their moody, unpredictable leader. "Your imperial viciousness," the Lady of Clubs ventured, "with all due respect, even if Alice is not a threat, we think you should move the heart crystal to a more secure location." Red thought this funny, in a pathetic sort of way, since neither the Lady of Clubs nor any of the other cabinet members knew where the heart crystal was.
"We?" protested the Lady of Diamonds. "The Lady of Clubs speaks for herself, your imperial viciousness."
"Absolutely speaks for herself," seconded the Lord of Spades.
And Red, raising an eyebrow, asked the Lady of Clubs,
"Did you just tell me what I should do?"
"I apologize, your imperial viciousness. I spoke out of..."
"You think my strength is not protection enough for the heart crystal? Do you, in fact, suppose that my reign is in danger?"
"No, of course not. What I meant..."
The Lady of Clubs was fortunate that the strangled baby cries of homecoming seekers interrupted them. The cat bounded out of the dome and returned in less time than it took Red to grow impatient. In his paw he carried the glowing cube, key to the looking-glass maze. Red held out her hand and it flew to her.
"In any case," she said,
pressing each of the cube's sides, squeezing it all over, turning it this way and that,
"none of you need worry about the heart crystal. It's not here at the fortress." "Why can't I get this to work?"
Jack of Diamonds stepped forward.
"Allow me, your imperial viciousness."
Jack took the cube. He pressed each of its sides, squeezed it all over, turned it this way and that. He began shaking it close to his ear, listening for loose parts inside, while Red addressed her cabinet.
"I refuse to leave this fortress. It would look cowardly when I have nothing to fear. If Alice wants to fight me, so much the better. I'll put an end to her. But let no one say that Queen Red is insensitive. If I have no power, you people have even less than I let you believe. Alice wouldn't spoil you as I do. If it will make you feel better, order the cat to prepare a defence. The cat will see to the glass eyes."
"Your imperial viciousness,"
the cat said, and drew Red's attention with a nod to Jack of Diamonds, who was still tinkering with the glass cube.
"What?" Jack said. "It's not broken. It takes a minute to decipher the code, but I'll have it soon enough. It's not broken, I say." "It had better not be,"
Red warned through thin, bloodless lips. She swooped out of the dome, down the spiralling hall, and across the open expanse of a ballroom that had never been used. The far wall of the ballroom was decorated with a huge quartz and agate mosaic of the Queen's face, and as Red approached it, the portrait's mouth opened, and she entered a secret passage known only to herself and the cat. The passage led to a balcony overlooking the hollowed-out heart of the fortress. It was here, in the secret heart of the fortress, girded about by supports, that the heart crystal burned a dark crimson, as it had since Red's assumption to power. She leaned over the balcony's edge and placed her hands on the crystal, its power surging through her. strengthening her for the coming battle. Chapter 51 Princess Alice Hart was spotted ordering a mug of cider in a brewhouse near the city centre. She was seen nibbling a Gwinnook kebab in Tymon Street and skulking along the avenue outside the Red Apartments complex. She was glimpsed entering a tube station at Red Square on a safari in Outer Wildebeestia, and at various other locations, engaged in a variety of activities. But the glass eyes and card soldiers dispatched to destroy these Alices found nothing, because these Alices were spectres, reflections come to life, conjurings from the real princess's imagination that she had dispersed throughout the queendom to confuse Red's all-seeing eye. While Red's forces were occupied with the decoys, Alice and her companions made it to the outskirts of the chessboard desert. The checkered land stretched before them, the promontory of Mount Isolation visible in the middle distance. The White Knight and Rook were tending to their men, bandaging wounds suffered in the Emerald Drive skirmish, instructing them to double-check all ammunition supplies and be sure weapons were functioning properly. Dodge kept to himself, studying the sword in his lap as if to ensure that it would be able to do what he'd set his mind to, taking the cat's lives. Alice should have been entirely focused on developing a sound military strategy, but she couldn't help glancing at Dodge every now and again, her attention divided. Revenge cannot possibly purge him of hate, but he won't listen to me, won't listen to anyone. Alice? Yes? From the expressions of Bibwit Hare, Hatter Madigan, Homburg Molly and General Doppelganger, clear that she had missed something. There is a lot of desert still to cross, Bibwit said, indicating the distance to the fortress.
And the problem of storming Mount Isolation, so ideally suited for defence, added the General. We'll need an army greater than Red's.
Our objective is to remove Red from power, Alice said, loud enough for Dodge to hear. Our objective is the Heart Crystal, not vengeance.
Dodge didn't look up from his sword.
He heard me. I know he heard me. Where Red is, that's where we'll find the Heart Crystal, said Bibwit. She'll want to remain close to it to maximize her strength.
But can you conjure a force of the size we'll need, Princess?
Asked General Doppelganger.
I don't know.
To conjure several doubles of herself was one thing, but an entire army?
You must try, Bibwit said.
She looked to the others. Hatter made a silent, respectful bow. Molly nodded, eager. The chessmen watched, waited. Even Dodge was watching.
To conjure an army, she would need to be extremely focused and precise. The millions of details of dress and weaponry, if a single one weren't imagined vividly enough, it would compromise the whole, and her imagining would fail.
She may have felt stronger than ever, but strong enough for this? Her scepter, once again whole, showed the intensity of her effort. The white crystal heart at its top glowed brighter and brighter, flashed and zapped as it became a cloud of electrical charges, with lightning-like bolts of energy sprouting out of it, encircling Alice. When these fireworks stopped, and Alice again focused her sight on her surroundings rather than her internal visions, she beheld an enormous army of Elysian soldiers standing in formation and fanned out behind her. The soldiers were a short distance off, and she couldn't even see to the end of them. There were so many.
I did it!
Someone was laughing. Alice turned.
I'm sorry, Princess Alice,
Homburg Molly said, slapping a hand to her mouth, but unable to keep from laughing.
What had come over the girl?
Bibwit, never one to take appearances for granted, approached Alice's conjured army for a closer inspection.
Ah!
The army consisted of toy soldiers,
figurines no larger than the tutor's ears.
"The princess is too far from the heart, Crystal," he said. "She cannot defeat Red from here."
General Doppelganger split into the twin figures of General Doppel and General Ganger, and the two of them paced in perfect step with each other.
"Well, we have to get to her somehow," General Doppel said. "But without an army of soldiers that are of a more normal size," said General Ganger, "our cause is lost."
It was Alice's turn to approach the soldiers. To her, they had looked suitable enough. She picked up one of the toy soldiers and imagined it marching back and forth in her hand.
"I have an idea," she said.
Chapter 52. The fortress was surrounded. Regiments of the Cut had been amassed from across the queendom and stood ready to defend Red's stronghold. Their ranks formed the front line, and behind them, as the second line of defence, were platoon after platoon of Glass Eyes. Both the Card soldiers and Glass Eyes were armed with the full array of weaponry available to them in Red's Wonderland. Orb generators, whip snake grenades, crystal shooters, cannonball spiders, AD-52s, all manner of knives and swords. As the suns rose on a new day, Red was breakfasting on spicy, crunchy tuttlebird legs in the observation dome. The cat and the members of her cabinet, none of whom had eaten since the previous midday, looked on with hungry eyes, but said nothing. Jack of Diamonds had wisely excused himself from the dome, but more because he feared Red watching him toy unsuccessfully with the key to the looking-glass maze than because of his stomach's grumbling. Red's teeth crunched down on the only remaining tuttlebird leg. The last scrap of night shadow faded with the day, and they all saw it at once. Gazing out through the telescopic glass, it would have been impossible to miss. An Elysian army, seeming to rival the population of the queendom itself, massed a short distance off and waiting to attack. Like Red's forces, the Elysians were armed with orb generators, whipsnake grenades, cannonball spiders, AD-52s.
"How has Alice gathered such an immense army?" the Lady of Spades asked.
"They'll just have a larger body count," Red fumed.
Sitting aside a spirit dane at the head of the soldiers, Alice raised her arm and held it above her head a moment, before bringing it down in a quick motion. The Elysians charged toward the fortress.
"Deal the first hand," Red ordered.
Outside, the Cut launched orb generators and cannonball spiders at the advancing Elysians. Direct hits, many of them, which should have taken out entire columns of the enemy. The Card soldiers followed up the barrage by charging into the smoke and flame. Confident, Red eyed the scene from her perch in the dome. But when the smoke cleared, she saw her soldiers surrounded by tiny Elysians. Her weapons had had zero effect, and the miniature army continued to push toward the fortress. Red's face contorted with a sudden realization.
"How could I have been so stupid?"
The Cat was trying to decide if this were a rhetorical question when she roared,
"It's a construct!"
With a dismissive swing of Red's arm, Alice and her army began to shimmer, the billion points of energy that formed them momentarily visible before exploding apart into nothing. Red scoped the queendom with her imagination's eye.
"Where are you, Alice? Where is my dear little niece?"
Alice and the others could hear the explosions and the rasping metallic sounds of the Cut racing toward the conjured army as they came upon the fortress from the opposite side. Until now their approach had been covert. They travelled only over the desert's black squares of tar and volcanic rock to camouflage themselves from Red's lookouts. But to enter the fortress, they would have no choice but to show themselves in open warfare. A Under cover of the black rock, Hatter flicked his top hat into blades and winged them at the card soldiers and glass eyes guarding the fortress's entrance. While the weapon was still in the air, he activated his wrist blades and charged. Molly flattened her Homburg into its slicing shield and took up his left flank with dodge, while Generals Doppel and Ganger took up his right, and the chessmen followed.
"We must be getting close to the heart crystal," Alice said to Bibwit.
The tutor looked at her, his ears bent in a questioning manner.
"I feel... I don't know how to explain it."
The princess reached out both arms and extended her 10 fingers toward the fighting in front of her. Star-bright branches of energy shot out of her fingers, forking and attaching themselves to card soldiers and glass eyes until every single one of them was caught on an end, while the other ends were ultimately still attached to Alice's fingers. The princess then raised her arms above her head, and the card soldiers and glass eyes lifted into the air, helpless. She sent them reeling through the sky. Somewhere in the chessboard desert, it was raining card soldiers and glass eyes. The sound of orb generators exploding on Alice's conjured army still assaulted the Elysian's ears, but it stopped almost as soon as they entered the fortress. Silence could mean only one thing.
"She knows," Alice said. "Can you see her?" asked Bibwit.
Alice felt that she was close to the heart crystal. Remote viewing wasn't something she'd been able to do before, but red was now clearly visible in her imagination's eye, standing in a large open room at the foot of a spiral hall, beckoning Alice with a cold smile on her lips. The steady pulse of the heart crystal was behind the queen, obscured somehow.
"She's waiting for me," Alice said.
"We should split into factions for safety," General Doppel urged. "Two targets may be harder to combat," agreed General Ganger. "And we can surround Red if it comes to that. Bibwit, Rook, Molly, you come with us."
"I'm staying with Princess Alice," Molly said.
Exchanged glances all around. The girl looked quite adamant, and this was no time for argument.
"Let her come with me," Alice said.
The generals dipped their heads, whatever the princess wished.
"Knight, Hatter, and Dodge will also accompany you," said General Doppel.
Which was when they noticed that Dodge was no longer among them.
"Where did he go?"
asked General Ganger.
"To find the cat."
Alice sighted him in her imagination's eye, cautiously picking his way down a hall.
"If he crosses paths with Red, he'll try to engage with her."
She cast her worried eyes toward Bibwit. He too knew why Dodge had left them, and Dodge's selfish desire for retribution might compromise the Elysian's chance for victory.
"We'll split the pawns between us," said General Doppel.
"Meet us at the heart crystal," Alice said. "Look for a spiral hall."
The generals bowed.
"By which time may the peace of white imagination have descended on the queendom."
Using her imagination's eye as guide, Alice led Homburg Molly, Hatter Madigan, and the chessmen through the fortress. It was as if she had been there before, the way she maneuvered without hesitation through the passageways, heading straight for Red, while elsewhere, avoiding detection by the packs of card soldiers that patrolled the gloomy rooms and halls, it was easy to avoid the enemy when he worked alone. Dodge hunted for the cat.
"Here, kitty, kitty! Here, kitty, kitty, kitty!"
He had already crept around the fortress's lower floors, visiting the Seeker's Cave and the empty hall of the Glass Eyes, and was now systematically working his way up, floor by floor. Ahead of him, the hall curved up and out of sight like a corkscrew. He could have taken any of the corridors that branched off to the left and right of him, but something, a feeling, an instinct, propelled him forward. Not three Spirit Dane's lengths away from the ballroom in which Red waited for Alice, he heard urgent, hushed voices coming from behind a door on his right. He didn't care if it was to be among his last actions in life. He didn't care about anything except confronting his whiskered nemesis. he kicked open the door and found not the cat, but Jack of Diamonds and the walrus butler, hiding from the violence. They both jumped, startled at Dodge's sudden entrance, but Jack was quick to recover. He took a small knife from his waistcoat pocket and jabbed the air in the general direction of the walrus.
"Hiya! Yah! We've got you now! Thank Isa you've come," he said to Dodge. "I thought I'd have to kill all of them myself. Hoi! Cha! Cha!"
Jack went on jabbing the air, but Dodge wasn't fooled, especially because Jack was trying to shove the key to the looking-glass maze into a pocket of his pantaloons. To Dodge, anyone who had collaborated with his father's murderers was an enemy. "There's only one reward for a traitor," he said, and raised his sword to strike Jack of Diamonds a fatal blow, when the unmistakable sound of purring. He spun around, saw the cat standing in the doorway.
"And what is my reward?" asked the beast.
Dodge gave voice to no warrior yell, no cry of attack. He simply ran at the cat, sword first. The creature leaped to the side and Dodge's blade missed, clanged against the stone wall just as the cat swatted his shoulder with a claw, tearing his Elysian uniform. Dodge himself was only grazed, four thin lines of blood formed on his skin. It could have been worse.
"A little something to match the ones on your face," the cat said, indicating the scars on Dodge's cheek.
Dodge feinted left, and as the cat moved right to avoid him, he spun and stabbed the beast with the knuckle blade on his free hand, an ancient Wonderland weapon, the tops of its ringholes sharpened to a blade that spanned the width of four fingers. A patch of the cat's fur matted with blood, but it wasn't a fatal wound. The cat lunged, a balletic move, landing on its front paws and kicking Dodge with its hind ones, the claws making shallow puncture marks in Dodge's chest and sending him stumbling to the floor. Seeing that the doorway was clear, Jack of Diamonds and the walrus ran out of the room, each hurrying on his own way in search of a new hiding place. Alice was fast approaching the spiral hall, sandwiched between Hatter and Molly for protection. But she paused.
"What is it, Princess Alice?" Molly asked.
In her imagination's eye, she saw the cat pounce. She saw Dodge roll clear and get to his feet, ready to face whatever might come next, battered and bleeding, but as determined as ever.
"It's Dodge," she said. "He's..."
But just then a patrol of card soldiers spotted her and rushed forward. In a wall to her right, Alice imagined a doorway opening into one of the fortress's many unused rooms. And just as she, Molly, Hatter and the others passed through it, with all of the card soldiers but one a few steps behind them, and that one, a three card, in the doorway itself, she imagined it gone. The doorway vanished, leaving the three card half sealed in the wall, and the rest of the card soldiers stranded on the other side of it, without their quarry.
"Dodge!"
She focused her imagination's eye on him, saw him punching the cat in the face with the handle of his sword.
"I won't risk losing him a second time."
She created another Dodge.
"I'll do this myself!"
he screamed when he saw his double. He slashed at his conjured self, which gave the cat a chance to shove him away and gain some room. The double disappeared, and the cat went at Dodge with his front paws poised to strike. Bad move. Dodge used the paws as targets. With his sword in one hand and the knuckle blade on the other, he stabbed them both simultaneously, and before the cat could retreat, he sunk his sword deep and hard through the beast's ribcage. The cat crumpled to the floor, lifeless.
"Get up!"
Dodge shouted.
"Get up! Get up! Get up!"
It felt as if he waited nine lifetimes for the cat to regain consciousness. He saw the beast's eyelids tremble, and again sank his sword into that furry chest. He didn't know that Genevieve and Hatter had each already taken one of the cat's lives, and that Red herself had taken three more. Now that he'd begun it, now that he'd tasted the revenge for which he'd waited so long, he was in a frenzy of rage and impatience for it to be over. "Come on, get up!" Dodge understood that a soldier's reflexes were fastest when he was relaxed, but his emotions were getting the better of his training, and he failed to anticipate the cat's cleverness. He stood over the creature, watching for the slightest movement. But upon again regaining life, the cat held himself as still as death, so that his first move wasn't a flicker of eye muscle, but the swipe of a claw across Dodge's thigh, inflicting the deepest wound yet. "Ah!" Dodge fell back. Blood pumped through his shredded trousers and down his leg. Slowly, almost leisurely, the cat stood. His wounds were healed, and he grinned. He appeared revived, stronger than ever, while Dodge's injuries were beginning to make themselves felt, his reactions slower, his shoulder and leg and chest pulsing with pain. The cat stepped toward him, and for the first time in the fight, Dodge moved backwards, a whisper of defeat in his head, as Alice at last came upon the ballroom where Red waited. "I send you wishes and hope for survival, Dodge, since you won't let me send anything else. Please try not to let your darkest urges overtake what's good in you." She was about to enter the ballroom, when a horde of glass eyes ambushed her soldiers, and suddenly Hatter, Molly, the knight, and chessmen were fighting for their lives all around her. "Red wants me to face her alone."
Clank! Screechonk!
The way Hatter and Molly fought, the particular manner in which they spun, kicked, twirled, punched, and used their millinery weapons, was very similar. "She fights more like a full-fledged member of the millinery than a halfer." But the thought was as fleeting as thoughts can be, and as Alice entered the ballroom, she left the Elysians to fight for themselves, her entire being focused on her aunt, with whom she was about to come face to face for only the second time ever. Chapter 53. Red had watched her niece's progress through the fortress with mounting intolerance. The interloper, for that's all Alice was to her, just a once coddled brat playing at a sovereign's game, had some nerve. How could Alice possibly believe herself the crown's heir? By what twisted reasoning had she convinced herself? If Genevieve should never have assumed the throne in the first place, then how could the daughter be queen? No, thought Red. She herself was, and always had been, the rightful monarch, and on this day she would prove it for all time. Alice stepped into the ballroom. Finally, Alice Hart in the flesh. The problem was, there were eight of her. Eight Alice Harts. Which was the real one?
"Do you think your little games will save you?" Red spat.
And from her scepter a bouquet of flesh-eating roses on a long vine shot toward one of the Alices. It passed through her without effect. A second vine of roses, their toothy mouths gnawing the air, flew at another Alice, but again no harm done. The real Alice stood third from the left in the row of Alices, thinking it lucky that she'd conjured her doubles, because she found herself momentarily paralysed, unexpectedly affected by the sight of Red. "I can't be angry, won't be. I conquered my anger in the maze, must control myself." But the heat of her temper was rising. The old feelings of abandonment after her parents' deaths, the unfairness of just about everything.
"I don't have time to dilly-dally," Red said. "Let the real Alice Hart step forward."
The Queen sent enough bouquets of thorny-vined roses to attack all 8 Alices at once. The roses passed through 7 of them without effect. The real Alice tilted her head in a certain way, and the attacking bouquet wadded up, strangled itself, withered, and died.
"We're family," Alice said.
Red snorted.
"Is that supposed to mean something?"
"Family,"
Alice said again, trying to convince herself more than Red.
"Don't talk to me about family. You were never disowned by your parents."
"I'd rather have been disowned by them than seen them murdered."
"Goody for you."
Red exhaled a jet of flame out of which stomped 2 Jabberwocky, breathing shoots of fire directly at Alice. The princess diverted the flames to either side of her, and wielding the white crystal scepter, scattered the Jabberwocky into countless particles of energy. As the particles were floating and eddying in the air, fading from sight, Alice fired a series of orb generators at Red, who was not yet committing too much of her power to defending herself, in order to draw Alice out and discover her strengths and weaknesses. With the attitude of a grouchy governess extinguishing candle flames, she snuffed out the orb generators before they reached her, repeatedly pinching her thumb and forefinger together in the air. Each time, zzz, an orb fizzled into non-existence. Alice could feel the heart crystal's energy radiating out to her, infusing her.
"It's behind the far wall."
Red, by staying close to it to realize her full strength, had ensured that Alice's powers would also be increased. Alice shot 2 orb generators at the quartz and agate mosaic, and
kaboosh!
It fractured apart. The red glow of the heart crystal filled the room. Red shed caution like an outgrown skin.
"It's mine!" she shouted. "The crystal's mine!"
She sent X-shaped blades cartwheeling toward Alice, and it was all the princess could do to avoid getting sliced or run over by them. She darted left and right and back again, but as soon as she safely avoided one batch of X-blades, more came at her, an army of weapons not needing soldiers to man them. She conjured a cocoon of white imagination around her as protection. An X-blade cartwheeled into her and knocked her to the floor. She tried blunting the blade's edges, but that didn't stop them from cartwheeling toward her.
"Have to get on the offensive."
Still dodging the X-blades, she dealt decks of razor cards from her sleeves and a couple of cannonball spiders, but she was too taken up with defending herself to see if they had any effect. She made a fist with one hand and brought it down in the palm of her other. The cartwheeling blades fell flat on the floor, harmless. But now she had another problem, because the room was alive with enormous, heavy, black, spike-covered wheels rolling rampant. Alice wasn't so slow this time. She imagined the nightmarish wheels turned into squares, and they locked in place, anchored by their floor-gouging spikes.
"Can't let Red bombard me. Must do more than retaliate."
She conjured a curious bomb, one that didn't destroy, but create. It burst at Red's feet, and a shimmering cage of white imagination-enforced alloy built itself around the Queen.
"You think you can contain me?"
Red laughed, and stepped out of the mini-prison as if it weren't there. Behind her, the heart crystal no longer glowed uniformly red, but changed colour constantly, from pink to white to red, to a marbled red and white. Aunt and niece stood in a cyclone of black and white imagination, the winds of both scudding around them, popping and sizzling with electrical charges and lightning fragments shooting every which way.
"Give me strength, heart crystal. Give me..."
One of Alice's cannonball spiders must have completely missed its target, because Dodge and the cat were visible through a large, jagged hole in the wall to her right. She hardly took her eyes off Red for a millisecond, but when she turned back, a large orb was coming toward her. She conjured one of her own, and the 2 orbs collided.
Whoomph!
The impact sent shockwaves of displaced air reverberating throughout the room. Red stood her ground, but Alice was thrown back and slammed to the floor. How had things gotten so turned around? One moment she was on her feet, holding her own against her aunt. The next she was laid out, looking the picture of defeat. One moment Dodge was fighting the cat as an equal. The next, the cat was rearing back to lance him with a claw through the gut. Dodge defiantly facing his demise as...
Dodge!
Alice shouted, and in a reflex she conjured an AD-52 into his hand, just as something knocked her on the head. A black shroud fell over her vision, and she lost consciousness, giving Red the only advantage she needed to put an end to the upstart princess. Chapter 54. Alice awoke in her bed, cold and sweating. Prince Leopold, Mrs. Liddell and the Dean were looking down on her with expressions of mingled concern and relief.
"What is this?"
Alice asked, befuddled.
"This," said Mrs. Liddell, "is your bed. You're at home, dear."
"You've given us quite a scare, my love," said Prince Leopold. "Do you remember anything of what's happened?"
"Do I remember?"
She was afraid to answer. "You fainted in church and have been in some sort of delirium ever since."
"No, impossible.
I've been in Wonderland," she said. Mrs. Liddell's face tightened. Dean Liddell cleared his throat. "Like in Carol's book?" Leopold asked, good-naturedly.
"It's nothing like the book."
Her vehemence frightened them. She wasn't well. She was too weak to be upsetting herself so.
"Alice," Mrs. Liddell said, "you've been very ill. Perhaps we'll let you rest."
"I'll check on you shortly," the prince said. Leopold and the Liddells turned for the door.
"But they can't leave. Not yet."
Not when she was so confused, so, she had to admit it to herself, disappointed.
"None of it real? The grown-up Dodge, my consultation with the blue caterpillar, the looking-glass maze?"
She sat upright in bed.
"But..."
"What is it?" asked the Dean.
"Have I really been here this whole time?"
"Of course."
"Can it all have been a fever dream?"
She fell back against her pillows.
"It was so vivid. How can it not have happened?"
"It's a trick, Alice," Dodge shouted, appearing through the wall, armed with an AD-52. "Whatever you're seeing, it's a construct. It isn't real." He was gone as suddenly as he'd come, back through the wall. Neither the Liddells nor Leopold had noticed the interruption. Alice studied them more closely, and now that she knew to look for them, she could see the energy bits of which they consisted. She felt something in her hand, the White Heart Scepter.
"So Dodge is all right. He survived the cat."
Indeed, facing imminent death, Dodge had not hesitated to use the AD-52 when it materialized in his hand. Instead of losing his own life, he took another of the cats, leaving the beast with only one. Alice swept the construct away. The bed and furniture, the Liddells, Prince Leopold, all vanished, and she found herself on the ballroom floor at Mount Isolation. Red stood over her, swinging her scepter down, to cut off her head.
"I'm not mad. I'm not mad."
"Yes, I am." With Red's scepter only a few Wonderland inches from her lovely neck, she blew hard at the evil queen, sending her flying backwards, and then jumped to her feet. Red was still in the air when Alice released a bolt of energy from her index finger. It latched onto Red, and wagging her finger back and forth, Alice smashed the queen against the ballroom's two remaining walls. Disorientated,
Red's imaginings fizzled and faded, less and less of a threat to Alice, whose abilities seemed to be increasing in direct proportion to her confidence. Unrealistic not to be angry. To never get angry or upset. It's a matter of degree. Alice's anger informed her, but it didn't rule her. Although she seemed willing to beat Red against the walls until the malicious woman died. A rather brutal death had it come to pass. But Red managed to free herself from the energy spear that held her, severing it with the pointed end of her scepter and dropping to the floor. It was Alice's turn to put her aunt on the defensive. She sent deck after deck of razor cards at Red. She conjured exploding cannonball spiders, the giant arachnids taking up all her aunt's attention. The black, hungry roses that Red sent snaking toward the princess were easily squashed. The orbs and unmanned airborne blades effortlessly waved off, and the spears of black energy. Alice was flattered, her aunt borrowing this idea from her, pinned motionless to the air by Alice's own white spears with no trouble. Both Alice and Red may have been strengthened by their proximity to the heart crystal, but Alice could see that she was the stronger of the two. It must have dawned on Red, too, because frustrated and annoyed beyond all measure, she gave up on her fancy imaginings and ran at Alice with scepter raised. They brandished their scepters like swords, two powerful warriors engaged in good old-fashioned hand-to-hand combat. The space above and around them glittered and popped and sizzled and smoked with the thunderstorm of their imaginative powers. Then, with the speed of a Gwynnook's flapping wing, Alice hooked the white heart of her scepter in a gnarled crook of Red's scepter and yanked the latter to the floor, where she exploded it with a jolt of white-hot imaginative energy. Do I kill, or... But what's to be done with her if I don't? She'll pose a threat as long as she lives. Red balled her hands into fists, making fleshy clubs of them. I'm stronger than you are, Red.
You will not defeat me, Red screamed.
Alice braced herself for another attack, realizing only too late what was happening. She watched with disbelieving eyes as Red launched herself into the heart crystal. The crystal crackled and smouldered. It began to vibrate, to emit a low, steady hum that deepened and grew in volume. Cornered by an AD-52 armed Dodge, and with only one life remaining to him, the cat saw which way the imaginative energy was flowing. He hissed and sprinted for the crystal. Dodge shot a spray of razor cards at him, but the beast was too fast and leaped into the crystal, its violent internal motions causing the entire Mount Isolation fortress to shake ominously, threatening collapse when... The noise stopped. All was still. The heart crystal glowed a steady white. The faction of Elysians headed by Generals Doppel and Ganger had converged on the scene, and together with Hatter, Molly and the others had defeated the Glass Eyes. All stood dumbstruck in the silence that inevitably follows great and unexpected events. For in the Queendom's long history, no one had ever jumped into the heart crystal, and no one knew what it augured for the future. Chapter 55. General Doppel was the first to recover himself. He saw Dodge sitting on the floor, panting, covered in blood, his own and the cat's.
Call a surgeon!
Not necessary, sir. Oh, no. I'm here, and I've just the thing.
The walrus butler stepped over dead Glass Eyes and waddled across the room, carrying a kit that contained a glowing rod to clean wounds and stop their bleeding, a sleeve of interconnected NRG nodes and fusing cores, and a spool of lab-grown skin with laser cauterizer.
The walrus bowed to Alice, pleased that fate had granted him the occasion.
"I welcome your return most heartily, Queen Alice," he said.
That brought Alice around. No one had ever called her queen before. The walrus began ministering to Dodge's wounds. Expressionless, Dodge stared at the heart crystal. Impossible to know what he's thinking. Has vengeance been served, or... There came a sudden disturbance at the ballroom's entrance, as the Lord and Lady of Diamonds, the Lord and Lady of Clubs, and the Lord and Lady of Spades pushed their way through the gathering chessmen and hurried up to Alice with looks of great relief. "We heard such a commotion," said the Lady of Diamonds, "and when it stopped we came as fast as we could, hardly daring to hope."
"Your victory fulfills our deepest hopes for the queendom," finished the Lord of Spades.
"Yes," the Lady of Diamonds went on, "absolutely. It has been horrid, the tyranny we've suffered at the hands of that woman."
"Red has kept us hostage, Queen Alice," offered the Lady of Clubs.
"Is that so?" Alice said, with a doubting look at Bibwit.
"Well, our bodies weren't held hostage so much as our minds," said the Lady of Clubs. "If we didn't obey Red, as every Wonderlander had to, we would have been sent to the Crystal Mines."
"And I'm ashamed to say," said the Lady of Diamonds, "that we Diamonds, a titled family dating back to the earliest epochs, were treated the most poorly by the former Queen."
"You?" guffawed the Lord of Clubs. "My wife and I certainly suffered more than any of your clan, and I dare say..."
"Say nothing but the truth, why don't you?" interrupted the Lady of Spades. "If anyone can claim the title of the most abused under Red, I think it is my husband and I."
The lords and ladies began talking all at once, arguing about who had been the worst off under Red's rule, until Alice put a finger to her lips.
"Shh!"
And they fell silent. "As soon as circumstances allow, a tribunal will be established to determine whether you behaved honourably during Red's reign, or whether you are, in fact, guilty of war crimes," Alice said.
"War crimes?" sputtered the Lady of Spades.
The White Knight and his pawns surrounded the suit families.
"But the one who is perhaps most guilty is not here," said Bibwit Hare.
"You mean this fellow?"
It was the Rook. All heads turned to see him leading Jack of Diamonds into the room.
"I found him holed up in a wardrobe, avoiding all the fun."
"Unhand me, you chessman!"
Jack shook himself free of the Rook, straightened his waistcoat with a tug, patted his wig, and bowed to Alice.
"Queen Alice, I have done nothing but try to serve you to the best of my ability. I risked my life to infiltrate this fortress on your behalf. Long reign, White Imagination!"
The walrus had by this time finished tending to Dodge, who limped up to Jack of Diamonds. Without a word, he removed the key to the looking-glass maze from the portly man's pocket.
"How'd that get there?" Jack asked falteringly.
"How could you, Jack?" the Lady of Diamonds gasped. "Shame, oh, shame!"
"What deceit from our only son!" the Lord of Diamonds lamented,
although he and his wife had both known about Jack's activities. Alice pointed at Jack's feet, and a building bomb exploded there, erecting a mini-prison around him. In the thrust and parry of battle, Red's crown had fallen on the floor. Bibwit picked it up.
"Walrus, if you please."
"Oh, I do," said the walrus.
"Polish this, and make it ready for Alice's coronation."
The tutor then turned to the young queen. There was little he could teach Alice Hart that life experience hadn't already taught her.
She was gazing thoughtfully at the heart crystal.
Alice? What will happen? Should we send someone after them?
Bibwit considered his answer for a long time before speaking.
Red, as we knew her, may no longer exist. But just as when an invention passes into the crystal to inspire imaginations on other worlds, so her spirit will certainly pass down and remain for all time an animating force. Jumping into the crystal has made her immortal. As to what forms she may take in the future, I can't presume to say. But I do fear for the universe.
Alice said nothing, lost in thought.
Now, for the family that nurtured you in that other world.
Yes?
Something tells me that they are worried about their missing daughter.
Bibwit's ears twitched mischievously.
Understand that I'm just an extremely learned albino, and you needn't listen to me. But I suggest you conjure an Alice Liddell of genuine flesh and blood and personality. Birth your twin with the fertility of your imagination, and send her to live out the life that is no longer yours.
But how? Am I capable?
Bibwit smiled. Perhaps there were things he could still teach Alice after all.
Look around you, he said. Look at what you've accomplished. I would have thought you'd learned by now that you're capable of anything.
At his instruction, Alice placed her hands on the crystal and
pop! Zzzz!
A burst of white light. Everyone covered their eyes, and standing at the center of it, locked in a synergic hug with the crystal, Alice imagined the billions of life-giving particles that made up Alice Liddell, the cells of her blood, the pores of her skin, until somewhere outside Oxford, England, a grown woman leaped from what appeared to be an ordinary puddle, surprising a thirsty goose. After weeks of residing in London at Prince Leopold's expense, the Liddells had arrived back in Oxford. They were sitting down to supper when Alice let herself in the front door, to a background of gasps and exclamations of relief, amazement, joy, and every other positive emotion that Alice's miraculous return could give rise to. She told of how she had escaped from her captors, a gang of Scottish stevedores looking to blackmail the royal family, she claimed, a feat which she herself pooh-poohed as nothing very astonishing. In Alice's absence, and having convinced himself that he would never see her again, Prince Leopold had fallen in love with another, Princess Helen of Waldeck. Alice proved less upset than her mother by Leopold's new love. In a matter of years, she would marry a man better suited to her station in life, Reginald Hargreaves, treasurer at her father's college. Prince Leopold and Princess Helen would wed soon afterwards. For as long as they lived, Alice and the prince harboured an affection for each other. And perhaps, in memory of their near union, Alice named her firstborn child Leopold, and the prince named his firstborn daughter Alice. All involved lived contentedly ever after, except, perhaps, Mrs. Liddell, who liked Reginald Hargreaves decently enough. But oh, how splendid it would have been if only Alice had married a prince.
Chapter 56.
The disarray of the queendom didn't lend itself to pomp and circumstance, so Alice kept her coronation ceremony short and to the point. Her one concession to fanfare was to broadcast the event on the government-sponsored billboards and poster crystals of Wondertropolis. She wanted the populace to understand that they had a new queen.
None of the billboards and posters would ever again feature reward offers for Wonderlanders who betrayed followers of white imagination, or advertisements for Red's numerous products and inventions. The new Queen and her retinue, Dodge, Bibwit, Hatter, Molly, General Doppelganger, the Rook, and the Knight, retired to Mount Isolation's observation dome after the coronation.
"What's that?"
Homburg Molly asked, making a face at the big hairy thing taking up space near a telescopic panel. The walrus was waddling around the room, offering goblets of wine from a tray.
"Oh, yes, that's the weak beast," he said, "a plaything of Jack of Diamonds. Have you ever seen a weak beast before?"
"It's ugly, and I don't like it," Molly said.
The walrus quite agreed. It was ugly. In time, a new Heart Palace would stand in place of the old, its garden featuring the grave of Sir Justice Anders, as well as memorials to Queen Genevieve, King Nolan, and the numerous brave Elysians who lost their lives during Red's tyrannical rule. But Wonderland's recovery would require vigilance. Glass Eyes and soldiers from the Cut would have to be hunted down and destroyed if they could not be reprogrammed. The principles of white imagination might once again be foremost in the land, but, as in Genevieve's era, problems would remain. Followers of black imagination would have to be monitored. Members of the population addicted to artificial crystal or imagination stimulants rehabilitated. Those thriving by corrupt business practices would comply with more ethical modes of professional conduct, or be shut down.
Queen Alice?
Yes.
It was Hatter Madigan. He seemed to have trouble finding his words.
I have given, devoted, my life to the protection of you and your mother. I've done everything within my power, and if ever I didn't meet the requirements of my duty...
You've done more than any queen could reasonably ask. The milliner bowed in thanks.
And I wish to continue in service. But I have an unorthodox request. I would like to take a temporary leave.
Alice thought of him sitting near the fire that night when she first exercised control over her imaginative power. How he had looked so ordinary without his weapons.
He is not consumed by duty after all, has interests and loves outside of it.
I had hoped you would rebuild the millinery, she said.
And I will, my queen, upon my return to active duty.
He thought to tell her of his reason, the loss of a certain Wonderlander whom he hadn't yet had a chance to mourn. But words failed him. Sorrow momentarily swelled his tongue.
Who will look after me in the meantime? Alice asked.
Hatter focused his gaze on Homburg Molly.
All the protection you need is right there.
Molly beamed, surprised, then tipped her hat.
Hatter, if you need time for personal matters, you may certainly have it. Your leave is granted.
Thank you, Queen Alice.
He excused himself from Alice's company, and Molly, almost bouncing with pleasure, followed him across the room.
The youngest personal guard to a queen ever! The girl bombarded Hatter with questions, as Alice cast a look at Bibwit Hare and General Doppelganger, who were involved in a debate about the health benefits of squigberry juice. The White Knight egged on the tutor, while the Rook took the General's side, neither chessman caring about the subject, but doing it for the enjoyment of watching the two celebrated Wonderlanders argue. Then Alice's eye fell on Dodge, standing alone at a telescopic panel, looking out at the rubble of Heart Palace. She approached him.
"It will be rebuilt," she said. Dodge nodded.
"No one will be forgotten, Dodge. Not Sir Justice, not the lowliest card soldier, no one."
Again he nodded. "I owe you a thanks." He patted the AD-52 strapped to his thigh.
I'm only glad you weren't too proud to use it. I should have used it more. She understood. He had killed the cat, but in essence the cat had escaped. Whether or not Dodger's confrontation with the beast had been enough to loosen the noose of black imagination around his throat, to pluck free the barb of hatred that had given his life purpose for so long, only the future would show. But Alice hoped he could put his anger behind him. She longed for the boy she once knew to take up the body of the man.
We might get to know each other again, refresh the love we once had, a love that, although we were young, was by no means childish. The Jabberwock tooth he'd given her. I'll wear it around my neck to show that I've not forgotten and I still care for him. A talisman against his darker urges.
She turned from Dodge Anders and glimpsed her reflection in a looking glass. She remembered her time in the maze when she stood in this very room and saw, in place of her own reflection, Red's face staring back at her from that same glass. But now her image rippled and faded, and there stood Genevieve and Nolan, with their arms around each other, smiling with pride. The progress of the Queendom, the Elysians' victorious coup, whatever successes and failures awaited them in the future, it all began with her, Genevieve and Nolan's presence seemed to say. The power and wisdom that resided within her, the most powerful queen ever to lead Wonderland. It's all in your head, in your head, in your head, Genevieve said.
I know, said Alice.
And despite the traumas of the past, the uncertainty of the future, she wouldn't have given up this moment for anything.
Isn't it wonderful?
We hope you have enjoyed this production of The Looking Glass Wars by Frank Bedour, read by Gerard Doyle. This program was produced and directed by Susan Mackowich, with music by Doug Katsaros. Text copyright 2006 Frank Bedour. Production copyright 2006 Scholastic Inc. All rights reserved. Now we invite you to listen to this special bonus track, written and performed by Hypnogaja, inspired by the Looking Glass Wars.
There's a place where the garden can take you through the looking glass. Find a way with the plants, they can take you to your past. Chase away all the funny pain down the rabbit hole, and another world awaits behind the little door. You can go ask Alice just why the when you where the garden can take you through the looking glass.